All right, so let's open in prayer.
Dear Lord, thank you for this time. Please bless Casey and Joe as they speak. Give them the words to say and us hearts and ears to hear. And please bless all the marriages represented at this retreat and help them to be strong and thriving and serving you. Amen.
So, thank you for being here. The first point we have is just an encouragement to preserve intentional time together because there's a lot of things that are threats to our marriage and to that the time together that we need to have strong marriages, including things like technology, work, temptations to just entertain ourselves, and children. And it's not that all those things are bad, but none of these other things are going to prioritize investing in your marriage. Our children aren't going to be like, oh, you know what, mommy and daddy need some time to talk. I've been too loud. I'm going to step back. You know, like, they don't have that foresight. They're focused on what they want. Technology companies that design our cell phones do not have our best interests at heart. Everybody should know that. If you don't, use your phone to read some articles, and then you should, Google it, and you can find out if you don't believe me. But and then just our own flesh, it's easy to be like, I've worked too much, I'm tired, I want to kind of check out and watch a movie, and I don't want to take the time to actually have intentional conversations or make that time for my spouse. Those things won't take that into account, and then,
On children, children are a blessing, and we need to be sure that we're giving them enough time to thrive, but for no other reason than our children's security, we need to preserve time together where we can connect free from kids. Your kids should never have to question if you love each other or are committed to each other. So very basic, just make a bedtime for your kids that leaves time for you to connect. Don't be like, we all stay up till midnight, then we all fall into bed, or whatever. Like, make a bedtime where your kids go to bed before you, preferably. If your marriage fails, your children won't feel loved or secure anyway. So make it a point to keep
time. Sometimes mothers have the temptation to, like, mothers especially have the temptation to, like, idolize the children and put the children first and be like, well, this is the most important thing. And fathers have the temptation to put the work first, and that's the most important thing. And sometimes we miss each other in those areas. So, yeah, please.
I think that involves all of necessity. Mm-hmm. Because the child needs.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And to call it an idol, it can run into that, but I would say that's sort of hard to start off with that.
I'm not saying every mother does. I'm just saying that I have seen mothers that, there's never a time where if the choice is my husband or the child, and it's not the case of, like, I'm not saying the child's crying and needs a diaper change and you don't do that.
Right.
But if you say,
or
I'm going to...
Or your infant will go to bed at your 8 o'clock bedtime, so you just leave it in the crib crying.
No,
you don't do that.
Yeah. But it's the like, I'm not even going to attempt to,
make my six-year-old go to bed at 8.
Say that my six-year-old shouldn't sleep in the bed with us anymore. Like, those are things that,
I just want to say, as a mom of one, because I don't know what it feels like to have six and me and that, but definitely I experience that. Because you don't understand, too, the value of your marriage and relationship, until it starts to have these cracks in it from just focusing so strongly on your mother-child relationship.
Yeah. Like, that, and that's the thing is, like, I think for a mother, there's very strong instinct to, like, to nurture the children, and just don't forget that you need to be nurturing the marriage too.
For the sake of
your children,
There's this idea that, like, we're big people, we don't need the nurturing.
Yeah, yeah.
My husband certainly is a big person and doesn't need this time and gentle nurturing that all those little people do.
Yeah.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that there are seasons, but we'll talk about that later. And then the other thing is that's been very helpful to us for prioritizing these things are just put the phones out of your bedroom. Like, once we got smartphones, it's like, oh, it's so convenient. It's got the alarm clock on it. We'll just have it charge next to our bed, and then that'll be my alarm clock. And we'd wake up in the morning, and first thing you do is, your alarm clock is your phone, and then you look at Facebook. Before I'm even conscious, I'm being affected by this outer input. So that's been, we just got some old-fashioned alarm clocks, and we charge our phones downstairs, and that's been a big blessing to us. And you know, one example is just we'd find ourselves, even after we put them out of our bedroom, being like, oh, the kids are in bed, we're going to brush our teeth, and like, oh, while I'm brushing my teeth, I'll just check my emails one last time. And then 15 minutes later, we're like still staring at our phones, and we're like, why? Neither of us are doing anything meaningful
we're
here.
We're not sleeping, and we're not, sleeping,
and we're not talking. Like, we could be having great time talking without children here, or we could be sleeping, which
so
would also be
talk
great.
Better tomorrow.
and we're not doing either because we're scrolling Facebook, and that's utterly meaningless. So that's kind of an example where we, yeah.
Yeah, we call it putting our phones to bed
yes.
after putting the
that, yeah,
to bed.
That was how we turned it, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, I would find that I was very intentional about not being on my phone with my kids, and then I'd put my kids to bed, and then I'd catch up on my phone, and then I wasn't interacting with Casey.
Yeah.
So that's where we reined in the yeah. that.
And it's, you know, every day you're tempted to change that or modify it, but it's having that in your mind of like, wait,
this
I'm supposed to have put my phone to bed before now. Like.
Right. Another note on the phones is keep the phones out of the dining room. So when you're eating a meal together, eat and attempt to talk. This is very hard with children, but attempt conversation because it models to the kids what you're aiming for. And if you do not have children, this is a great built-in time to connect. Like, you don't want to be old and retired and sitting at the dining room table doing this. It's not healthy, you know?
Yeah.
So
and
build
like,
the stage in any yeah. point that you're at now. Start yeah. now.
And how much more, like, if you get to the stage of being retired, you'll have other times of day you can do that. You know, like, we shouldn't be scrolling Facebook when we're in church. For us, I feel like mealtimes are something that should be, you know, even just for your own brain, even if you aren't married, even if you just were somebody who lived in a house with, you know, other adults, like, as a single, you could totally be like, you know what, I might not be married to these people, but there's still people who are eating at a table with me, and I want to have that respect for them of, like, and it's something I'd like to train my kids, that, like, when you're an adult, that, like, this isn't, you know, this isn't
It'll
helpful.
It'll be a habit they have to break if it's not already.
If it's not already.
Actually, that was something I even tried to do when I was living alone. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that's really helpful. Yeah.
Can I just throw something in for another study, not this one?
Yeah.
Maybe we can all think about not having phones in church.
Mm-hmm.
Not even to look up the Bible, right? Because mm-hmm. the young people, when
yeah.
they get to the age when they have phones, they're going to look at the Bible and they're going to look up anything else.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think
that. Maybe as a church, we can think about that one.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It's good though.
That's definitely worth thinking about. I've definitely, like, it's not that there aren't times on that note that, like, I didn't bring a Bible or I forgot the Bible, and but, like, my intention usually with church is to have the physical Bible there and attempt to use that as much as possible for that reason of I like seeing my, even, I like the experience better, but also, like, I like my kids seeing me reading a Bible because it communicates something very different than, oh, he's just on his phone again. Like, there's no visual.
I want to deviate.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're saying, what the... Wait, this is that I thought would be appropriate time to me to say, I personally would love, and I don't feel the ability because it feels like I belong to your church entirely, but I really miss the days where it was zero technology. Simply because it's really one of the only times, like even if you don't have technology in your home, any interaction in the world is fraught with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yep.
it's just such a beautiful, reverential time to mm-hmm. have that. So mm-hmm. I'm just thinking like,
yep. yeah. That's definitely worth considering. So the next point we had was, which relates to other things we've already heard this weekend, is from Proverbs 23, 4, and 5, and the theme of do not work. Do not overwork, not do not work. Yeah, that was, sorry. That was Ira. So do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. And this verse where it talks about like, set your eyes on that which is not, like that's what covetousness is. You're lusting after something that doesn't like, it's not yours. You don't actually have it. So you are really setting your eyes on something that doesn't actually exist. And also because this, the goal of being rich always increases. You will never actually achieve what you think you're achieving. Reasons we may overwork include, one, the scarcity mentality, the, like, it's all on me, scarcity mentality, feeling like it's all on me, it's my burden. If I don't, you know, work harder, I'll not have enough. Or finding, for a lot of men, it's the finding the identity in their work, or covetousness, like I mentioned. And then it's not just always just overwork through a career. Like, it's not just like, oh, the one way that Eric could overwork is his, you know, construction job. Like, any of us could overwork in home projects. Like, I might be like, well, okay, I'm doing okay in how I manage work, but every free moment I have, I need to make sure I'm making progress on my to-do list at home, or just other, like, ambitions that we have, or hobbies or ministries. Sorry, Eric, if you listen to this. Miranda was across from me, so... So at times, all these things are good and necessary. We should have hobbies. We absolutely need to fix things that are broken in our houses. We need to, you know, do our work in our jobs to provide for our families. Those are all well and good. But if we then fail to invest in our spouse and in our kids because these other things come first in our attention, then we are failing. Often we choose to invest where we feel confident and receive recognition or instant gratification. And so for a lot of husbands, it's like, I know how to do my work. I've been doing this type of work since before I got married. I know how to get the results I want to get and to make the money I want to make, and it's satisfying. And then I do my work, and other people say, wow, you did such a good job. I know how to be diligent in it. And then it comes to marriage and family, and maybe I didn't practice good communication skills or whatever these things are, and so I feel like what my wife is asking of me, I'm not good at that. And so... My instinct is not to draw it, you know, push in there, because I'm like, okay, well, this communication thing is hard. Family relationships.
What? You mentioned the point again, what you just said previously.
If we fail to invest in our spouse and kids, or if we choose to invest where we feel, often we choose to invest where we feel confident and receive recognition or instant gratification. Or even just, you know, people who are like, well, in my free time, I just want to invest in watching movies and, you know, doing the fun things that I know I can watch a movie, and I can, while I'm watching the movie, not worry about the things I'm stressed about. And so that's, it's easy. It's an easy way to get that gratification without actually having to do the work. Yes, and then, so some of the examples, family relationships often take more time to see the fruit. Working through difficulties in your marriage or disciplining children are not things that I can just, you know, go out to the bakery and mix the recipe and bake the thing, and half an hour later I'm done, you know, like,
and
I've got something to show for it. It's like, it's very slow work oftentimes. And often it also requires you to change yourself, so... If you find you're overworking, what does it look like to cease? You know, from that verse that says, because of your understanding, cease. It may take both effort and lifestyle changes. So these are things that we need to pray about, these decisions with your spouse, if you realize that you are overworking. And ask the question, like, would your spouse say that you're overworking? One example of this, kind of having the discernment to cease, was in our life, that I think has been a wise decision, was when I was working at the bakery and they offered me a manager position in the bakery. And I was like, you know, we'd already started our business and had kids, and like, it was kind of flattering to be like, you know, hey, would you like this position and more money and whatever? And I was like, it's very tempting in one sense, but it's really the only part of me that would have wanted it is the pride of being asked, because like practically for our family, for our finances, like it was not the best path forward, and it would have sidetracked so much of the other things that God wanted us to be doing. And so choosing not to take that promotion was the right call there. And that doesn't mean that that's everyone's decision. Like, you may be led to stay in a demanding job, but there might be other changes that need to make. So, like, if you're staying in a demanding job, but you're somebody who does normally, you know, spend lots of hours watching movies or entertaining, like, that might be where you say, okay, well, what are the other things I'm doing or the other hobbies I have that, you know, maybe you're in a demanding job and you think you still also have to do all your own home projects, but you've got the money to pay somebody else to do the home project. You might say, okay, well, the more important thing here is actually, like, money's not the problem. I need to spend time with my wife and kids and pay somebody else to, you know, mow my lawn. Like, I wouldn't do that because I couldn't afford that. But, you know, if you did, like, that's fine. Like, sometimes we have this, like, lifestyle thing of, like, Joe Schmo does, you know, does his own oil changes and I need to do my own oil changes because it's like, well, do you? Yeah. Yeah, things like that. And yeah, so just cutting out unnecessary drains on your energy or attention. And often that just does take the humility to say, you know, what are the things that are optional? And what are the things that are really need to come first? And if the things that need to come first aren't happening, then, you know, some of the optional things need to be, you need to be willing to cut those out. Sorry.
Yeah. And the other thing to beware of is saying, oh, this is just a season. So you might think it's just a season, but if you want to find out if it's really a season, set a date on your calendar to check if the season is over. Like, if it's June and you're like, this is just a season, and then you check in the beginning of August and you're still feeling overwhelmed and crazy and harried and the kids haven't been getting enough time or your marriage hasn't been getting enough time, then it's just a season is going to be your whole life if you don't do something.
Yeah.
And obviously the first thing we need to do is pray about it. You know, pray about, are we supposed to change something here? So that's what we did when we decided that we needed to just go into our own business and not have Casey working at Hawthorne Valley. It was a stretch of faith because we were like, can we really make it on our own? And we're like, well, we can't keep doing this because our marriage or our kids are going to suffer if we keep going at this pace.
Yeah.
So, and God's blessed that decision and trusting him with the finances. And earlier in our marriage, we had another situation where Casey and I weren't seeing each other. The kids hadn't been born yet, but it was just a bad job, you know, like a job that wouldn't let us see each other at all. And it paid enough, it paid more money than what Casey.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was basically half, like I was basically getting paid half when I switched to Hawthorne Valley. And I was like,
right,
it is 100% worth it to take that pay cut and have time together than to,
keep going.
And well, yeah, okay, we'll have more money and we might be able to afford more things, but we would have, you know.
So what is at stake if a season lasts too long? It's usually relationships are at stake.
So then the next point we had was to seek a deeper understanding of your spouse. 1 Peter 3:7a says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. How do you grow to understand your spouse? We found this comes through intentional conversation. You know, I'm not going to use telepathy or, you know, any other, like, I can't, like it really is, if you want to understand your spouse, you need to take the time to have conversations and ask questions and be curious. And it's not something we can leave to chance. It's like, well, you know, someday I will try to understand my spouse, but that's going to happen, you know, whenever it happens by accident. If your spouse is intentional, maybe that will happen. But if neither of you are, it won't. So it's something you need to schedule and build into your life as a habit. So you can ask yourself, like, on a daily basis, do I have time to connect with my spouse? So then I think you had the next part.
Right. If you're not sure what to talk about because you haven't made the habit already, some suggestions could be, you could talk about what we heard at church today, or a book you're reading, either together or separately, or sometimes we discuss podcasts that we've separately listened to. One of the questions we like to ask each other, which is, I think, based on the Five Love Languages book, he has this concept of asking, how is your love tank? Which means, like, is there enough fuel going into your love tank to make you feel connected to me? You know, like, Are you feeling loved by me right now, or are you feeling distant? So that's just been a helpful way that we ask.
Yeah, and like that was definitely something for me that like conversation, you know, Joanna liked conversation. That was very easy. That was a harder thing for me to know really what she was even asking for. Like Joanna would ask me questions and I would be like, I thought she wanted the answer. You know, like this is like a quiz, you know, I just need to get the right answer to the question. What did you talk about at work? And I'm like, I'm stressed because I'm like, I can't remember what I talked about at work. And when I realized what she wanted was to connect over anything, I was like, okay, I can do that. I can provide conversation above the level of a 3-year-old. And that will make her happy. So, but for guys, you can ask your wife, what type of questions could I ask you regularly that you would find meaningful? And that was something that I've heard a couple others since say, but you know, Joanna was like, it basically gave me when we had this conversation about like, this is what I really want from the conversation. It's like, you know, if you asked me these 3 questions on a regular basis, it would be meaningful to me. And I'm like, okay, well, that's helpful. And then feel free to write those down, like make a note. What are the things my wife wants me to ask her regularly? And then if you're in a situation where you could talk to your wife and you're like, I can't think of anything to talk about, then you're like, ah, I do, I know, I have questions. So it's a crutch, but it works. So when I asked Joanna, she said to say, what has God been speaking to you in your quiet times? What are you anxious about and what are you looking forward to? I probably shouldn't ask those questions more than once in a day. But you know, up to once a week definitely has been pretty safe and helpful. And then she genuinely feels like she is able to communicate and is heard, and I'm curious.
On the other side, if you're a wife, don't think my husband would like to be asked what he's getting out of his quiet time, because it's not true for me. He doesn't really want to be asked.
Well, it's mostly like it's mostly that like sometimes that's like, well, if I haven't been getting a lot out, I'm like, it's
doesn't want to feel like a failure.
I feel like a failure. Like, well, I should have grander ideas, or you know, I asked her and it was So don't necessarily. This is why I'm saying ask your wife. Husbands may have different things they'd like, or they might not want to be asked. I'm not saying.
What were the 20 questions after the quiet time?
What are you anxious about, and what are you looking forward to?
And also, like, I probably wouldn't like to be asked what I'm anxious about, because if I'm having a meaningful conversation, I don't want to talk about what I'm anxious about.
Just lives in a box right upstairs.
Exactly. That's totally. Like, I have a checklist somewhere.
And these are not questions that every wife will want either.
Yeah, so that's
just me.
That's why I said
why we're giving it
to a husband, ask your wife what would you like, what would be meaningful to you. Yeah.
Depend on the love tank thing.
Yeah, the love tank.
Oh, love. So picture it like a gas tank. Like,
right.
if the amount of love and affection you've received from your spouse is, you know, you're feeling really close to your spouse and you've had, you know, you just went on a date and you've had a great time together, that's a full love tank and you feel really close.
You can go through, like, daily life, taking care of kids and whatever, and not feel distant from your spouse because,
you know,
your tank has been filled recently-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Versus, like, the last thing you did with your spouse was have an argument about how much money you've been spending or what, you know, whether or not you should be going to, you know, some event this week or not. Like, those tensions often make you feel more distant from each other, and you need to have something, you know, you kind of need to come back together and do something that's like, okay, we're for each other and we're with each other. So, yeah, kind of the, like, it's more of just a gauge of your spouse's emotions towards you. And it's, Does that answer the question? Okay. Did you finish?
I think it's just...
But that's my part. Haha. I'm the blue text. All right. and then the other thing is that for some people, this could be, especially some guys, that might be easier to have these conversations, like walking together, driving together. Like, it might not be sitting down at a table across from each other. Often we talk when we're just drinking coffee on the couch, because we do that 3 times a day. Definitely there's, you know.
3 times a day?
Yeah.
I don't know, I think.
usually.
How do you think we live on
that? for some people.
One of those cups of coffee for an extra 30 minutes of sleep.
Well, I have a question about this at the end, but I want to.
Okay.
Right, so we're done with
that. I think it's your turn.
So next, after Next point would be dealing with tensions in marriage. So I wanted to read Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. I, therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. So, Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. So, point here being, don't ignore tension areas in your relationship. Believe it or not, these are areas that God is working or would like to work if you let him. And there's always areas that we can both grow in marriage. So when tensions arise, be humble and ask God to help in the moment, and then have intentional conversations about the area of tension, but maybe not in the heat of the moment. So say you're mad at each other right then. Don't be like, all right, let's sit down and have an intentional conversation. You know, like maybe you have to finish up with whatever was going on during the day, but come back at another time to talk about it again. And ignoring it may seem easier, but if you never take time to talk about the tension and what's behind it, you start building up offenses, which leads to assuming the worst of each other.
So one example practically is in our marriage, I'm the person who wants more physical intimacy than Joe. And at the point where in our marriage where we couldn't talk about that, it was a tension point, it made us both just assume bad things about each other that weren't entirely true. But once we were able to start talking and praying about it together in a non-confrontational manner, which we'll talk more about later, we'd be able to talk about how we were feeling and thinking and come up with a solution. That helped to dissolve the tension because we could each feel like the other was moving towards us and was for us. Whereas if you have unresolved tensions, then you're kind of, every time the issue comes up, you're kind of pushing against each other. And in the end, we felt closer because there was the tension that we worked through than if we just never had a problem and we were fine. Like, we actually, it was something that helped us to grow together.
Yeah. So when I learned that physical intimacy was the primary way that Casey feels emotionally connected to me, it helped to change my perspective about that.
And then in contrast to that, like, when I learned that for Joanna, this meaningful conversation that, to me, it's just like, oh, she wants to know what's going on at work. She's like, no, this, like, is as important to me as physical intimacy is to you. Like, this is the primary way that I feel secure and loved and connected. I'm like, oh, wow, okay, that's, like, really important. I should prioritize that and make time for that and make it good for her. That's not something that's just like, okay, well, you know, this is, like, one of the things we do in the day. We have conversations, you know, whatever. It was actually important.
Right. And we're not saying that all men are like Casey or all women are like me. But don't assume that what makes you feel emotionally connected to your spouse is the same thing that makes him or her feel close to you.
Yeah, so kind of the encouragement there is just work to understand what is the thing for your spouse that makes them feel emotionally connected to you. And there might be a lot of different things, but I think there will be a primary thing or two that if that isn't in place or if there's tension about that topic, that they're going to feel unloved or they're going to feel distant. And that if you are feeling distant about other things, that is an area where you can kind of bring that emotional security back together.
Right.
And then also the point with that is just prioritize, once you find out what that thing is, prioritize it the way that you would like your spouse to prioritize your way of feeling loved.
At the beginning of the topic, you mentioned about, you know, don't ignore the tension.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, let's have a discussion about this, no, but finish what you're doing. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to not to have...
In the moment?
I mean,
I think we've had some in the moment
sometimes,
that were fine.
Yeah, it's just that, like, if you're finding that it's not resolving, if you can resolve it at the moment, then that might be
or
fine.
Or if the kids are present, I wouldn't do it.
Talk about it in a way that's kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, for... Yeah.
Sometimes, like, 80% of the issue is solved if
you
just wait to talk about it later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you can each process where you yourselves were coming from and be like, why was that such a big deal for me before you even...
Yeah. Like, if I say in the moment, why are you doing this or whatever, usually it doesn't solve it, but if I, like, wait a while, it's like, hey, like, it was really upset me when you did this.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, it's like, it's so much easier to deal with.
Yep. Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
I think also, if you are in the moment... both upset in a moment, not like one of you is upset and you come and help me. it's good to communicate that you will come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Instead of just parting ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Right. That's very important. It's you feel great. Yeah. Unloved it.
Yeah.
And like nothing will get resolved if it's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some things do have to, I mean, it depends on what it is, if it is something that does actually have to be dealt with, like a decision has to be made.
Yeah.
Like, say you're arguing about dinner, are you happy?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, in yeah.
You might have to make some sort of decision
right. Yeah.
Deal with the situation and then come back and deal with it.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is that, yeah, like, it doesn't mean that the decision that needs to be made doesn't get made now.
Right.
But you can come back later and say, like, this is what I was thinking or how I was feeling when this happened, which we'll talk more, I guess, about that in a little bit.
Yeah. The non-confrontational manner side of it was...
Oh, we're going to start. We haven't said that before yet. Okay.
So our goal in discussing a topic of tension should be to move towards each other. So this requires speaking to one another in a non-confrontational manner, which means, what we said, usually put better not in the moment of offense. Sometimes it can happen that way, and it works. But so come back in your no distraction time, which means you should be having no distraction times. So that's reference to the previous point.
Yeah.
You know, if you need a script, say something like, "When you said this, it made me feel," or "I heard this." Is that how you meant it, or did I misunderstand you? The goal here is not to make your spouse feel defensive. Or you could say something like, "I'm sorry that I hurt you, I didn't mean it that way," or "I was wrong to say that, I was feeling pressured, I was tired, but it was still wrong of me to speak to you in that way."
Yeah. And so, yeah, basically just the, like, in whatever that is, don't do the Adam thing of blaming. Like, take full responsibility for the part that you did. It doesn't mean that your spouse didn't say or do something wrong, that they aren't wrong in some way, but for the part that you are responsible for, take responsibility for that. And give grace for your spouse's part in it. Be open about how you were actually feeling. Like, you're not going to resolve conflict if you just never talk about the way that you were, you know, something said hurt you. But the goal shouldn't be to win the argument. If you, with any relationship, like, if you win an argument, you don't necessarily win the person's heart. And our goal is to better understand each other, not to hammer the other person and seeing, like, "See, I was right, proved you wrong," you know,
right.
Which is our what our flesh wants to do. And then, you know, not saying things like, "You shouldn't feel that way," or the kind of passive aggressive, "I'm sorry that you felt hurt." Like, that's not the same thing as, "I am sorry that I hurt you. I didn't mean to." Like, they both seem like a way of saying, "I didn't mean to," but one of them puts the blame on the person who's being hurt.
Right.
And so, for guys...
I'm sorry you're a sorry person.
I'm sorry you're a sorry person, yeah. Adding offenses or...
Sorry you're, like, so sensitive.
Yeah, like, adding the sting, like, that's not going to win the, it's not going to win your spouse's heart. And so, for guys, we need to practice active listening without trying to fix your wife. That's definitely something that, like, there's times where my wife comes to me and she wants to resolve something, or she wants, you know, like, maybe it, like, she's sharing with me something she's anxious about, and I'd be like, "Well, you know,
why don't you just stop it?
Just stop it, because that's totally irrational."
I'm, like, not saying you say that.
No, but yeah, like, but that is the type of thing. Like, I'm like, how can I just make this, you know, bad thought stop, or be, you know, and it doesn't mean there isn't a place to speak truth when somebody's having anxious thoughts, but. The way you do it does make a difference. But the thing is, like, also realizing that for Joanna, being listened to has very high value. Like, she wants to be heard. And so if I'm trying to understand her and hear her, that's a different thing than I'm trying to fix her. And then I think one of the things that's been helpful very much for both of us is just give your spouse the grace that you would like to receive in the areas that you are weak. You know, James 3:2a says, "We all stumble in many ways." And so if you can, instead of saying, "Well, you know, I don't struggle with that. I'm, you know, I have no problems in this area." You say, "Okay, what are the areas that I do actually struggle with? And how can I give grace to others?" And this isn't just in marriage. This is in relationships in general. But often with our spouse, we're more tempted to be more, sometimes more critical or more direct. And so, yeah, giving that grace. Another good verse for this is Ephesians 4, verses 29 to 32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. And so then...
I want to ask... We'll still break into the discussion.
Yeah, I think we can do a brief discussion groups. Did anybody have any other questions or comments?
We are going to break guys versus girls after this. So if you'd rather hold your comments, but if you want to comment now, that's fine too.
Yeah.
There's one thing that I've been thinking about recently, and I feel like everyone who's young here hasn't hit this point yet, but I've heard that as children get older, a time that they blossom in their willingness to like discuss deep topics is when it's bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I started noticing this with our oldest last night. The boys to bed, they all went to bed, but the girls to bed, and Hannah said, Mom, I would really like to do a Bible study with you on beauty and jewelry and piercing and modesty, how to overlook things and not get annoyed by other people. Think about those. Another girl, like, poke their heads over the side of the bed. So, we talk about it a little bit, but I foresee, conversations encroaching upon that time between 8:15 and 9:15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do see that being she's wrong here, but something that happens. But growing up with six girls who are in my family, I do think it's a little bit more of a girl thing than a guy thing. Although I'm sure it happens both ways. But I think it will encroach, but I don't think that those are all the time. It's not like
yeah.
It's not going to be every night.
There's going to be seasons where it's more often, but depending on how many kids you have, but I don't think that it will be something that happens every week. There'll be like two or three nights in a row where everyone's like on your talk to you or whatever.
Yeah.
And it'll be 3 weeks where there's nothing, and then it'll be again somebody else.
And that's.
There will be that, but I don't think it'll be every night.
I feel like every night could probably. I definitely have some siblings.
Which might be fine. It's just
yes, I do. All right, I'm not touching it. Yeah. She talks.
Yeah. Till 2 in the morning, Naomi, right?
Early hours.
Which it kind of depends on what other times and opportunities you have. Like it would be a big deal, like there are times that Lael particularly wants to talk about things I definitely see that dynamic of there are times that they open up more at that time, but there's also times that they are just manipulating because they don't want to go to bed.
And there's times that, you know, Lael wants to know how many miles to the moon after she's supposed to be in bed. And that is
like,
totally a I don't want to go to bed yet question.
Yeah. And so we're like, well, we could talk about that tomorrow, but if you ask,
something that's
what do you think about this spiritual concept or, life question, I think definitely there's worth, and I think if you're, if you're attempting to fill your spouse's love tank more regularly, then it shouldn't be like, this is the one time this month that we were going to have a conversation or that we were going to connect in any way and that it's been derailed. Yeah, I don't think that shouldn't happen 7 days a week.
Right.
And if it does, then maybe there need to be some communication with them.
I'll read the discussion questions,
and we'll turn off the recording, and then we can just have a very small group of guys and split.
Larger group of girls.
Yes. first question is, are you in a season where it's difficult to make time for your marriage? And part two of that is, have you been in a season like this, or have you been in a season like this? How did you prioritize your marriage in that season? And what did you do to bring the season to a close if you're not still in the season? So that's basically just the seasons of marriage concept. And then the second question is, were we doing that one?
Yeah, just the second, not the third.
Okay. How do you tend to respond when a topic of tension comes up in your marriage? And then just the last encouragement is to don't underestimate the power of prayer. And so we can also end our sessions with praying together. So. Thank you.